This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am with my co-host once more, diving into the YouTube comments. It's Jon. Hello, Jon.
Once more. That's the last time? I'm finally free?
No, sorry. Your contract of provision of services to the Roaring Elephant Podcast has another 87 years left to run.
Indented servitude, right?
I knew you were gonna use those exact words.
We've been married for too long, I think.
I think so. Our brains are starting to meld together, which is more concerning for you than it is for me, because as previously discussed, I'm not that bright.
Yeah. But okay. This is why we like our audience. That's because we don't have to talk about stuff ourselves. We can actually talk about things people ask us. And usually we just respond in the chats and whatever and don't mention it. But in this case, one of our wonderful listeners actually came up with an interesting question where we're not entirely certain if we can actually talk about a lot, but we're going to give it a try.
Indeed.
So it was a month ago, and I did apologize in advance. This was going to take a little bit of time to get to this, but max 6, 7, 11 a month ago, when we were talking about the good of open source and how adoption of open source should typically be a good thing, he posted this little message asking if we could give our views on moving AI to OSS as discussed by a couple of people on a YouTube channel other than ours. And we took a look at it. We actually watched the video. We had a little talk about it, and we came to a certain conclusion. Dave. This is me throwing Dave under the bus.
Indeed. Well, first of all, thank you, Max6711. I'm sure that's your real name, for commenting. We really do appreciate the interaction. As Jon shared the image, we do have a little bit of commentary and interaction going on in the YouTube comments. So thank you for that. The core challenge, I think, at least for me, is I don't really see, from my relatively significant experience in open source and open source projects and the world of open source, I don't really see how open source will be able to make a huge impact on Gen AI and LLMs as they exist at the moment. So that doesn't mean that they won't influence the space. That doesn't mean that they won't, improve and get better and better. But at least these kind of platforms in their current state, like to develop a new model or a new generation of model based on something that exists, takes a absolutely gargantuan amount of money because it is based on, a huge amount of very expensive, often at the moment GPU based, or now becoming more and more often, specifically neural processor based hardware to go and figure out, all the dev testing, building, analysis, training, etc., etc., etc. All this work to do requires a huge amount of very, very expensive stuff to get it done. The advantages of open source, again, all of these opinions are purely my own, but the advantage that open source has always had has been, in some cases there's a concept out there. Like, let's take one of the simplest ones. An operating system exists. Windows was out there, Linux was out there, all those sorts of things. Windows was out there, Unix was out there, all these things existed. And someone thought, oh, what about if we did something like that, but free and open, and Linux was born. I'm not going to call it GNU Linux, but, do what you want. You know, you can take the database space. You know, Oracle existed, was incredibly popular. There are many other databases out there. And, you know, people came up with open source alternatives, things like MySQL and Postgres. And people were able to do that because in order to be able to develop all of those things, like, you didn't need crazy hardware. You didn't need to spend crazy amounts of money. You know, the old adage of the bedroom hacker that created an other amazing open source project was possible and is still possible. But this focus that, and some of the almost, I would say, restrictions that are imposed by creating, you know, new, actually genuinely new and advanced generative AI models. Again, I know very little about this space. I rely on experts that I talk to, and Jon, to clue me up more on this space. But from my understanding, without the, you know, huge amounts of neural processing equipment, GPUs, and all this other stuff, the massive amounts of training data and processing power to analyze that training data, you just can't get the same kind of results. And no amount of talented, smart-brained individuals that I'm aware of are able to, like, change that. And I hope I'm wrong with all of this. I hope that a talented number of super smart individuals, like, coalesce together and figure out a way to, like, break the model, like, break the way that, you know, LLMs and generative AI are created in a way so that someone with, you know, a home GPU or a home, you know, neural processor relatively inexpensively can create things that are as powerful and as wonderful as the evolutions that have been made by giant corporations like OpenAI and Microsoft and all these other folks. But from where we are today and from what I know, which again is very limited, I don't see it at the moment. And I hope I'm wrong. I often am wrong, so hey, that's a good sign for everybody. But I don't know. I don't see a path here where open source will set us free or will suddenly leapfrog, you know, drastically the work that has been done by the Facebooks / Metas, the OpenAIs, the Microsofts, and so on of this world. I just don't see it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to surprise you and say I kind of disagree.
Ooh.
Like half a year ago even, I was pretty pessimistic myself. I do a lot of presentations to organizations about Gen AI and things like that. And I've always been about, yeah, doing this on premise, even if you have a lot of hardware and whatever, it isn't going to run very well. This is going to be online, governed by the big cloud providers out there. And just accept that. 6 months onwards, I'm no longer saying that. Models are evolving, and you have Mistral, the new Databricks model, a couple of other ones that actually produce pretty good results on premise. And yeah, that's a lot faster than I had expected, because I was thinking, okay, if it'll take long enough time, at some point this will trickle down, that will happen. But it is happening a lot faster than I thought, and it's being fueled by companies, by organizations. I mean, Databricks is a company. They want to make money, and they just open source their DBRX model for download for everybody. Now, obviously, cynical little me is thinking this is their baby model, and when everybody loves the DBRX model, they'll come out with, and here's the professional version, which costs $9.99, something like that. But again, things are changing a lot. And also, while you were talking, I was kind of reminded by why I got fired. I've been fired once in my life, and that was because the company ceased to exist, and I was kind of the last one to turn off the light. And that was Silicon Graphics. And Silicon Graphics built these bespoke, hugely expensive supercomputer thingies, which you needed if you wanted to make Jurassic Park. You wanted to make a movie with a lot of GFX, graphic effects. You needed a big supercomputer from Silicon Graphics to make this, and these things cost millions. I mean, this is in the same order of magnitude as these model training farms today are, taking inflation into account there. You were kind of doing that. SGI, Silicon Graphics, was bankrupted by Linux. Pure and simple. It just became possible to make all of this stuff run. Maybe not 100% as effective at the start, but it kind of took 3 years, and SGI went from here to nowhere. And that was very fast. And that was all done by 80% open source. Obviously, the Alias Wavefront, the software, that was still commercial software, but you didn't need that big iron anymore to run that stuff. You could just run it on your laptop. Well, today, I mean, I'm talking now 25 years ago. Today, you can actually run that stuff on a laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, this took 3 decades. So you're right. Tomorrow, open source isn't going to displace the commercial world. But I think this is a nice example of showing that it can actually happen, and it has happened. And with the amount of interest, the amount of activity that's happening in the whole LLM Gen AI world today, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, things are going faster all the time. It took us a long time to go from walking to swimming, not from swimming to walking, from walking to flying was less, and from flying in the air to flying to the moon was even less. So we accelerate all the time. So if it took us 30 years to replace these big GPU-driven graphical virtual whatever machines to putting it on your laptop, maybe 5-10 years is a usable time frame to look at. Actually, you want an LLM, pick them up. And more related, I'm going to finish with that. If you just look at standard neural networks, so not the new type LLMs that are used by GenAI, but the standard vectorization, NLP, regression classification, where do you get those? From Hugging Face. A repository of open source models. My fear, well, not that scared, but what I think is going to happen is that the commercial entities are going to do whatever they can to stop that. Because if I can think of these examples, they probably have too. And it's, of course, in their best interest to try and stop that as much as possible. And that's why you've seen things happening like the multimodal LLMs. They're just trying to make it more and changing all the time so nobody can catch up because it's new all the time. But that's going to run out. At some point, something has been developed far enough, and any change is incremental. And that's where OSS can actually catch up.
I don't disagree with anything you've said. But
I heard it here first, folks.
I mean, it's anything is possible. But, and yeah, maybe I just don't have the vision to kind of think how far ahead things might need to go. But I think some of the shifts that you were talking about, like with SGI, is a perfect example. Like, to me, that's a matching of the hardware was drastically evolving at the same time as the software was evolving as well. And I don't think there's all sorts of commentary and has been for many, many years about, Moore's Law's dead and all those sorts of things. We could do another podcast episode on that. But I don't know that I see the same pace of innovation in those areas? And I don't know. I don't disagree with anything you said. I think it could wind up that way. I certainly hope it does. I really genuinely hope that open source like finds a way to compete with the kind of the behemoths in the industry at the moment, because I think it will make a huge impact on the way that we think and consume kind of LLMs and Gen AI. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what that timeline could look like. I don't think we know or have enough information to necessarily be able to speculate there.
That was all that kind of stuff. It's always hindsight, right?
Like, yeah.
When I was at SDI, I didn't see it coming either until I was turning off the light.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I remember, a different, slightly different stage of that evolution / revolution. But, I worked at Red Hat in the very early days, and in a less than 5-year period, I went from a situation where we wouldn't even be able to talk to large banks. Like, they just wouldn't talk to us. They're like, ugh, we're not going to trust our business, our billions and billions of dollars on some, rinky-dink x86, home PC. And like 5 years later, Unix was dead. Like, there was no Unix left at all in any of the big banks, pretty much. It had all been replaced by x86 and Linux. Yeah. And like, it was amazing to be a part of and experience that transformation. We've seen other similar transformations since, but like, that's the one that personally like really resonated with me. Maybe we will see this. Maybe we will see a similar evolution. I certainly say, as I keep saying, I really hope so. I really genuinely hope so. But I can't quite see it from where I am at the moment.
Yeah, maybe just going back to the conversation that Max pointed us towards, the main narrative there was that there's a problem with bias in LLMs. And I mean, that's true. LLMs are being built in the US, and that culture is very ingrained in all LLMs. And their position was that OSS would be a good way of changing that, because instead of having a couple of companies having very monolithic models that everybody uses, just have open source generate more and more different models with different biases, so everybody can find a model that suits their needs, that works for them. And there are definitely some good ideas behind there. I mean, there was an example about how models used in Africa don't really work, because they come with recommendations like use purified water, whereas big parts of Africa don't have purified water. So having a model that is more culturally local, more realistic about the surroundings, about what's available, definitely makes sense. So the problem, yes, there's a problem, definitely. The solution, however, and they were talking short term about between now and a couple of years, OSS, I don't think, is able to fix that, because, as you said, you still have the problem with very expensive hardware to be available. It is possible. You can build your own little models, but they're just way less performant.
Yeah. And like, when it comes to bias, and I think you mentioned this when we were chatting about the topic before we started recording, the truth is that like one person's bias is another person's, oh no, this is just how the world is. Mm-hmm. This is just fact. And like the whole kind of, there are some biases that are more obvious. And at one point in time, we will eventually stop talking about Bard and its Black Vikings and things like that. But the truth is that, like, these models are trained on data, and people don't want to say, oh, just train it on, like the obvious response you get is, oh, well, just train it on all the data. But that in itself introduces biases. So like the data is where the biases come from. People selecting the data is where the biases come from. That's what introduces, you know, biases into the results. And it's very difficult to see how that can be, you know, removed, because I say, like, one person could say, oh, the fact that you know, Bard produces Black Vikings means it is unbiased. And yeah, that's a different,
it's unbiased about the truth.
exactly. But you know, this is one of those areas where I think there almost are no right answers, because the quote unquote right answer, I'm losing lots of air quotes these last few episodes, will look different for each different person depending on what their biases are. And that's the thing that people often don't really like having pointed out to them, is that everyone has biases.
Yeah, and bias isn't always accidental. Sometimes it's intentional, even institutionalized. And I would never use it myself, but since the other people in that other video mentioned it, we can also mention it, I guess. But France, for example, is extremely protective of their language and are forcing bias in how these things are supposed to be working. And I'm giving an example of France, but every non-English language has some kind of language protection in place. I mean, Spanish is probably safe from being removed from the world soon too. But sometimes people just put bias in, sometimes for very bad reasons. Think about despots that are trying to, yeah, fake news kind of things. And sometimes just because they are honestly trying to, bless you, if you're watching YouTube, you know why I said that, trying to do something good in their eyes by intentionally enforcing bias, but it is still bias.
And
last thing I'm going to say on this is having a lot of models with all different biases isn't going to solve the problem either, because people, in my opinion, won't find the model that works best for them. They'll always try to find the one that's the worst for them so they can scream about it on the internet. That's how the world works.
Ah, dear. And on that note...
on that note, I guess that's Dave giving me a hint that that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast. You can send us comments with good questions. Max, thanks you again for giving us inspiration for this episode. I hope this answer was kind of what you want. And if not, that's our bias. But you can also become a patron. Contributions do help us keep this quality information in the air. We're on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit notification bells, and you can go to our website at www.roaringelf.org, and there's links there to the Patreon page, YouTube page, and a lot of more stuff. And you can send your feedback, obviously, in chats, comments, anywhere on the internet, or by plain old email to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is not Black Viking Jon.
And my name is Screaming at the Internet Dave.
And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.